The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Beyond, and hello everyone, my name is Jonathan Dornbush, and this is a special episode of Podcast Beyond. I'm going to call it episode 645, because this is a huge thing we are going to be talking about. Of course, Paper Mario the Origami King has been announced for July 17th, but on PlayStation 4 on July 17th, you'll be able to play Ghost of Tsushima, which we just got a really in-depth state of play for, roughly 18 or so minutes of pretty much just straight gameplay or showing off features of the game. So we got a lot, and there is a ton to dig into, and I'm joined this week by Max Scoville.
Samurai!
And Brian Altano.
Samurai!
I think there's no better way to talk about this game than yelling things excitedly, because we can go bit by bit, but I just wanted to get sort of a surface level how you guys felt about that, because for me, that was such a great showcase. I cannot wait for this game.
I will say first, before we get into it, I guess legally we have to announce that Max and I did provide all the voices in this game.
Of course.
So... No, we didn't.
I do have to mention Andrew Goldfarb, former member of the show and our former coworker, does currently work at Sucker Punch. That is not influencing our decisions to talk about this game, but that is
With all due respect to Andrew, he's been working there for a little while. I think they've been working on this game a lot longer than that. And based on everything I've seen Andrew doing, I don't think he made this game entirely himself. So, I think the game speaks for itself.
He did make the entire Borderlands series by himself in that brief year he was working for Borderlands. So.
They just held on to Borderlands 3 for a decade.
This is exactly what I think I needed today. This is such a stunning reveal. This is I'm kind of giddy right now, because first of all, it's been a while since we've gotten a sort of state of play from PlayStation, period. It's been a while since I've really gotten to get excited for like another open world game again. I love open world games, and I feel like this year's had like a couple of great games here and there, but nothing that's like really, really grabbed me on that level. Just something to get truly lost in. And three, it's just absolutely stunning, and I'm more appreciative of its minimalism than I am for its sort of like exertion of features everywhere. It seems like there's a lot going on in this game, but it's somehow still restrained, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, that's actually, I think that's a good way of putting it. I don't know anything about this story really. Like, I know a tiny bit, but I love that everything they've shown us has kind of kept the characters pretty tightly under wrap. Like, it hasn't been focused on like, this is a character-driven story. They're like, no, this is the title is the sort of the key word is Tsushima. Like, there's also the ghost, but that's kind of a nebulous concept, whereas like, this is a game about Tsushima. This is about exploring a world, a location, and they're doing one of my favorite things with this, which they basically just scrapped a mini map and they're like, you got to follow the wind, dude. There are locations to find, but the fact that they're emphasizing exploration and curiosity of the player rather than being like, yeah, here's your map, it's covered in icons, go like follow the dotted line on your OnStar in the corner,
Yeah, let's jump right into that. In a second, we can sort of go into all the guiding wind, the foxes, the whole like exploration of the world. And Brian, how did that initial look at the game's world strike you? Because like Max said, I really appreciated the restraint of it.
I totally adore it. I tend to play a lot of open world games with sort of a reduced HUD. There's always that thing, like, to be completely frank, there's that like first few hours where I play most games like that. And then eventually you're kind of like, let's get down to business and just pull up the mini map and like go where I need to go and get the cutesy stuff out of the way. But I do think that I'm going to play this game in the way it's at least being presented so far. And I appreciate that because this is like Max said, this is a world that I don't know a lot about. It feels sort of like they've taken, I've seen sort of like some reductive takes on Twitter that it's not really doing anything new. But on the flip side, I don't necessarily need it to, because I feel like there are so many expertly crafted systems in video games currently. And so cherry picking the best of those things and putting them together into something that feels kind of warm, but also unfamiliar it's kind of exactly what I'm looking for here. And the world presented me that. Like, I was definitely getting moments of Assassin's Creed and moments of Breath of the Wild, but it's also totally doing its own thing. And so I think that like exploration is going to be really fascinating in this game. And I think it's going to really sort of like nudge you to head off the beaten path. And, you know, I don't want to make this like a comparison between other games, but like something like The Last of Us is obviously much more sort of narrative driven. We all played the original game that had a series of like open-ish areas that kind of funneled you through. It's telling a different kind of story. But I really, really love the sort of emergent storylines that happen in open world games like this, and the sort of chaos of bringing all these systems together and having moments that we can share on shows like this and on forums and stuff like that, that are sort of exclusive to us alone. And I love stuff like that.
Yeah, I really love just the opening of the state of play where they just kind of let Jin start to roam through the environment on his horse, and you see him pass by a bear attack, I believe it was. Like, there's people contending with animals in the environment. He comes upon a place that is under Mongol control, and you can, you know, take the option to free people there or move on. And he went on to this house, and after he stopped by a man at a fire and then came across foxes. And there's just such a nice, like, natural organic way of finding all these things that weren't like, go to this checkpoint, 20 meters later go to this checkpoint. It was like, there's one guiding force, and if you want to go to that point you can, but there's still a lot in between.
Right.
I really love how, like, I've said this a few times, but I'm a tough sell on samurai stuff. Like, there's a few sort of select corners of that, you know, genre that I'm interested in. One of which being like, you know, Akira Kurosawa movies, kind of the classics. We'll get to that in a minute. But even as a piece of history, like, it just doesn't really grab me. Like, feudal Japanese stuff, it's hard to hook me. And this does something that I really appreciate, which in addition to being sort of minimal in terms of HUD and like what you're looking at, it also doesn't over stylize anything. Like, I don't know, I can't speak to the historical accuracy of every little, you know, stitch of clothing and fabric, but it seems to put just as much detail on like grass and trees as it does on armor, which I feel like so often video games are like, let's make the swords really cool. We can just like phone it in with the grass, like make right. The swords look badass, make monsters in there. And like they could have been like, let's put dragons in here. And it doesn't seem like they're going to be dragons or kappas or, you know, like weird, you know, mythical beasts anywhere. This is about like kind of people and nature. And it seems very, you know, very grounded.
I think that there was I'm obviously going to reference stuff like Breath of the Wild a lot in this, because I think that that's a Japanese open world game created by Japanese people. But it also does something that I think Japan does really well, which is sort of that kind of bento box approach, where there are pockets of things where things are dense, and there's also pockets of things where things are sparse and minimalist. And I think some people don't really want that in an open world game. They just want, like, that's why GTA 5 is one of the most best-selling video games of all time. It's because it's just pretty much jam-packed with stuff, and there's some areas where things are a little bit more laid out. But I actually like really, really dig my moments in Red Dead, for example, where you're just sort of riding across a field for 10, 15 minutes without anything spectacular happening. And maybe there's a couple things happening here and there. And I think like Japan as a country is something that handles that really well. And I think that that's something this game is doing pretty well too, in terms of they showed a lot of restraint in celebrating the minimalism in this game. Like a lot of the stuff in this trailer was big open fields of wheat and, you know, a tower off in the distance. You're up on a mountaintop. We saw some camps and some cities and stuff like that. But I think a lot of this is going to be about that journey and the sort of quiet in between the chaos. And I don't know. I think that's something I really love.
And that also,
some people want something a little more dense, but
it doesn't spoil anything also. Like, yeah. We know that there's going to be bandit camps and Mongol things to liberate. And we've done outposts like stuff like that before. But to be sort of like, to really, I mean, this really like excited me, where they were looking around the horizon and there's like pillars of smoke popping up. And it's like, if you see a weird tree, maybe there's something over there. And that's like, I want to find out what's over there. I don't want that to be spoiled for me. You know, I don't want that to be revealed in this stream, because I want to like, they did a good job of showing off the mechanics and being like, here's what you will be doing. But also kind of piquing my interest and being like, we're not going to show you exactly everything you're going to be doing, you know?
Yeah, right. The beginning of this has Jin standing at a bit of a higher elevation. He sees those smoke plumes and everything. And I had that immediate impulse of like, okay, I need to go there and there and there whenever I get to that point. And then as it went on and showed you all these little things. And again, like we've been saying, the parts of it on their own aren't necessarily revelatory looking. Like, they are very emblematic of other...
Did he freeze?
He did.
Oh, no.
Do you want to finish the sentence?
We could do that. I was going to say this, like, video games are an iterative medium, and like, it's, this definitely has, you back?
There he is.
You can hear, weird, you guys didn't freeze, but I did. That's true.
Oh.
I heard you guys perfectly.
Oh, well, we're saying how, yeah, this is mechanically similar to things we've seen before, but that's not necessarily a bad thing, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And it's, I think it really ties into, they're giving you something that's familiar, yet really new and intriguing and makes you curious, like you guys have been saying. And I think the way that you see things like getting new minor charms, like, of course you level up skill points and you get these things that help your techniques, but the way they're integrated into the world and the way they feel like points of interest, but they're not like, here's a giant, you know, big blinking red light to get you to come to a place. Here's like a naturalistic way to get there. I love sort of the flow of the world they're introducing.
Yeah. I actually do wonder if they're going to add sort of simple accessibility options to that too, for people who don't want to play anything like that. Because I have a feeling that's probably something they're considering. But then again, that's part of the system. In the same way, you know, something like Sekiro didn't really go, oh, you know, we're going to make an easy mode with where the bosses have less health, because this is the way we want our game to be played. You know, I ultimately respect the choice of the developers in a situation like that. And if that's where they want to go, that's where they want to go. That said, in terms of Sekiro, I was definitely picking up some vibes of that too, but I think the combat in general looks sort of much more accessible for the average person. It looks a little bit more forgiving. And so I'm really excited to see what they do with that, because I feel like that's going to be something that's going to like really get crazy too. Like, if you look at something like God of War, you could hypothetically like button mash through that game, but you could also go into those like high level Bloodborne-esque Valkyrie fights and fight some like impossibly difficult boss and, you know, try to defeat her with like limited weapons and stuff like that. And I love that stuff. I love when games can scale to difficulty like that.
Yeah, so let's jump into the combat, because that's right where I want to go next. We see Jin tackling a shipyard, essentially an enemy shipyard, and we see it two different ways. One is more swords blazing, and then the other is as the ghost of Tsushima in a much more stealthy version. So yeah, let's talk about the action, more action-oriented one, because I was really interested to see the beginning of that fight. It was, you know, they said you can initiate a standoff with an enemy in the environment, and then each hit almost seemed to be like a one-hit kill if you got it kind of perfectly.
Right.
I wonder if that's sort of like the answer to, what do you call it, like Deadeye in Red Dead, or what's it, it's, you know what I'm talking about? The
yeah,
sort of thing, whatever it's called. But yeah, I was unclear exactly how this works, because like sort of showing off, like let's show off the combat and it being just a bunch of one-hit kills. Like, there's got to be obviously something much more to it than that.
Yeah, it felt like an example of maybe this standoff thing with lower level enemies, but I have to imagine there will be some pretty like spongy higher HP bosses that you'll probably have to take on, who don't just die in one hit.
I'm
curious how they'll handle that.
Once again, like a lot like Sekiro, you could basically sneak up behind most of the like sort of grunt enemies in that game, your dated moment to moment average enemy, and kill them with one hit. Like that was or you could, you know, come around, fight them head on and do something a little bit more flowery, you know, and you wanted to do something a little bit more, just a little bit more aggressive and just show off your skills. You could do that. I mean, the stuff that we did see is brutal. And I think that video games have sort of conditioned us to be like, you can shoot a guy in the head 15 times and like numbers will fly out and he'll kill you. But like in real life, if you come up to somebody and you slash them across their body with a giant sword, that's mostly it, you know, like it's kind of the end of it. And so, yeah, I think it's obviously going to get spongy. There's going to be some big grunts, some big bosses. I'm wondering how far that goes, because where I did appreciate Sekiro was it did veer into bizarre fantasy at times. You would fight huge monkeys and ogres and stuff, and I don't think this game will get that far, but I do think you will fight some sort of like bigger enemies with tougher armor and like maybe like different weapons and apparatuses that make the fighting a little bit more intense, like mini bosses and regular bosses and stuff like that. So but in the meantime, I'm completely cool with like killing people with one hit.
Yeah, no disrespect to whatever story plans they have, but I would totally not be surprised if there is a moment in this game that is like a hallucinatory experience level, almost like a Far Cry thing, and you fight maybe a little bit more mythological creatures.
That's not the case. I don't want that.
I wouldn't be shocked, but it feels like it could fit into this. But it does feel like we're going to be a little more ground level, and even toward the stealth side of it, it felt like a really, really good Assassin's Creed game. What that sequence felt like to me.
Yeah, no, I feel like most people who make sort of like feudal Japanese or Japanese video games or even like any sort of like Asian influence video games have to consistently show this specific level of restraint, which is, how do I not cross this line and make the player fight fantasy dragons? Like, it happens all the time, and yeah. I wouldn't fault them if they fell into that rut. It happens a lot. I remember playing, like, what was it, True Crime: Streets of Hong Kong? Do you remember that game?
There's like a dragon underneath the city or something.
Yeah, and so you're like 70% of the game, and all of a sudden you have to fight a dragon with like your fists, and it's like, it's that like point where most people playing the game did like that Seinfeld gift thing where they got up and walked away. And so, yeah, I'm hoping there's not a lot of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I don't think we'll get that far. But
I mean, I think that's the sort of the old, you know, giant enemy crab trope of like, if you're like, we tried to make this as historically accurate as possible. Anyway, you're going to be fighting a Tengu and he's got gunpowder missiles. Or, you know, like,
got something. It. The giant enemy crab thing is so perfect for this.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think for seeing sort of boss type stuff, we kind of saw this with the hint of, you know, blowing up a black powder cache, but fighting off, you know, Mongol invaders who have like early gunpowder, like you're probably going to see dudes with cannons and stuff. And it's going to be, you know, I'm really excited about this. Like, it definitely, like, it, I will say this, it does not look mechanically revolutionary. Like, it looks like it is refining a lot of things, which I don't think there's nothing wrong with that. Like, taking things that are proven to work and then fine tuning them so they do something interesting. Like, that's how you make a good video game.
It's how you make a good anything, really, you know?
Yeah, true. No, obviously the thing that I got most excited about, which is really kind of counterintuitive, was when they were like, hey, we have Samurai Cinema mode where you can make it entirely monochrome, grayscale, black and white, kind of grainy photo effect to make it look like a Kurosawa movie, which is like literally the first thing I demanded when I saw this, where I was like, this looks great. It is beautiful and gorgeous, and I love how much color there is. Can I remove all of the color? Is that possible?
Yeah. No, Alex Navarro from Giant Bomb actually put up a tweet where he was like, here's me interviewing the game director of Ghost like 2 or 3 years ago, and on the show, me being like, hey, you're, you know, inspired by a bunch of Kurosawa stuff. You ever thought about doing a black and white mode? And he was like, huh, that's a good idea. and there it is. Regardless of how it got in there, I'm so happy it's there too. I'm one of those weirdos that would totally play a game like that. When they added sort of like accessibility options to the Nintendo Switch on a core system level. and you could play Breath of the Wild in black and white. And I remember doing that for like an entire afternoon. You could play pretty much your entire Switch in black and white. And I remember being like, this is so cool that you can even do this. There was also that cut, that what was that cut of Mad Max Fury Road that they released?
Black and chrome.
Yeah, black and chrome or something like that. Yeah, I think that adds so much. On top of that, you can play the entire game with Japanese VO, which is super cool, with subtitles and everything, which I probably will get into. I've been weirdly watching a lot more stuff with subtitles in general since becoming a father, because there's a lot of times where you're watching a movie and your kid will start throwing shit at you or yelling, and you know, it's good to see what's on screen. So yeah, I love all that stuff. I know a lot of people that played Breath of the Wild with Japanese VO and subtitles. One, because they weren't the biggest fans of the North American VO in that game. But two, because it sort of just feels like it fits the mood. And if you don't know Japanese, it sort of adds to the kind of escapism of it all.
Yeah, it definitely, I love what they're doing to, I think, straddle the line between, they've been very clear that this is not like an historical recounting of something that happened and a true to life retelling of events, but it is trying to be true and honest and honor the history of the part of the world that it is focused on. So I do like that those options they made very clear, like before you even start playing, you can change these options, which I think is very key. Mm-hmm. I do also want to mention, I did love that they brought up photo mode immediately.
Of course you did.
It was great. Well, it's so cool to be able to change like the particle effects to take a video and to use the score and the soundtrack. And then the last bit that they did mention was Jin's customization, that the armor is mechanically important. It is not just a visual cosmetic change.
I'm so torn on that, because sometimes I'm like, I want to make my guy look exactly how I want him to look. But other times I'm like, but I want to be motivated to get new stuff. You know, like, and if it's stats based or mechanics based, like I'm going to be like trying to find the outfit that makes me do the most cool stuff. And then I wind up looking like an idiot. And I think, and I kind of am okay with that. You know, like sometimes it doesn't, the best gear doesn't like look the best on you. You know,
there are games that have rectified that by allowing you to kind of drag the stats of a specific gear set you have unlocked to the aesthetic you like.
Spider-Man had that with the skills.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that would be a good solution for this. I'm torn on that too. I it's weird because it's like I love customization in general in video games, because more options are always better. But I also like the sort of deliberateness of going, this is our character, you know, this is our world. So yeah, we'll see. I guess it depends. I think I'll do what I always do, which is I'll wait until I find the coolest costume and I'll wear it until the game is over, even if it doesn't make me as strong, because I'm stubborn. You know, that's just, I feel like that's always been my approach, and I don't think that's going to change.
At least you can collect different flowers to change the color of it.
Yeah, I'm so into that.
There's something, but yeah, there's a lot I think that we're really excited to have finally seen from the state of play. But like you were saying, Max, it didn't really spoil it. It doesn't make me feel like, oh, well, I know the game now, there's no point to playing. Like, it did perfectly straddle the line of showing you a lot, but making you excited for what it's showing by the promise of what could be after it.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited that we're only 2 months away at this point from this game. So we'll probably be talking about this quite a bit more. I also can't believe this is Sucker Punch. Like, going from Sly Cooper to Infamous to this, seeing the evolution of the studio is just incredible.
No, I mean, the glow ups from some of these sort of like it directly conjoined to Sony first party studios is just phenomenal and inspiring. It's just the coolest stuff to see them go from these like very rudimentary action platformers with mascot animals to this.
I hope they have Tanukis that steal stuff as like a nod to Sly Cooper. That would be a very,
that would be,
I have a feeling they'll do so, there'll probably be a fox that looks like Sly Cooper in the game.
Yeah, who has just like a little mask.
Yeah.
Or you could have a Tanuki. They live in Japan, but they're not actually raccoons. They're dogs.
Really?
Anyway. Dog.
Well, I think with that Tanuki fact, that about wraps it up for this episode of Beyond. Thank you both of you for joining me to talk about this game. Obviously, we're going to be talking about it a lot more in the weeks to come. So if you have any thoughts about the state of play, please write in to beyond@ign.com or respond in the comments, and we'll definitely read some in the weeks to come. about how you're all feeling. We just watched it. We just came fresh from it, so didn't have time to get those comments yet. But thank you for watching this episode. Normally, Beyond is live every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific at beyond.ign.com, youtube.com/IGNBeyond, and your favorite podcast services. You can otherwise find us on IGN.com and youtube.com/IGN. We're also, of course, on Twitter. I'm at JM Dornbush. Brian is at Agent Bizzle, and Max is at Max Scoville. Anyway, thank you so much for listening and or watching this episode. And as always, Beyond.
Beyond.
Samurai!
Samurai!
Here's a quick question for you. How did you sleep last night? If your battle for a good night's sleep feels relentless, I have the answer. It's a podcast called Sleepwave, with meditations and hypnosis created to help you fall asleep. My relaxation techniques will help you feel calm and ready for sleep, with soft music that will help you fall asleep in minutes. Most listeners never hear the end of an episode, so search Sleepwave on your favorite podcast app and find out why over a million people have fallen asleep to my voice.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am extremely excited to invite you to Rachel Uncensored. It's my podcast where I sit down and get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. And sometimes we might be under the influence when we do so. We cover things from personal stories to hot button issues. And it's the only place on the internet you can find an uncensored version of me. It's a side of me that you might not have seen before because it's not the most family or brand friendly. But don't worry, I'm still sort of slightly a decent human being. If you're intrigued, then make sure you check it out. New episodes drop every Wednesday. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.